From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. This hour, Venus on fire, Mars on ice, and I don't mean the planets, with John Gray. Stand by for that. Here's what's happening. This just in, federal authorities arresting a U.S. citizen of Pakistani descent at New York's JFK Airport in connection with that attempted Times Square car bombing. The man was identified as Shahzad Faisal, 30 years old, of Connecticut. Police have interviewed the registered owner of the bomb-laden sports utility vehicle. They said he was not a suspect, but he recently sold the dark-colored 1993 Nissan Pathfinder on Craigslist to another individual, whom the Associated Press reported was a Pakistani-American. The bomb scare forced the evacuation of Times Square on a very busy Saturday night, as police used a robot to break into the smoking SUV and defuse the makeshift explosive, which was made from everyday items such as propane tanks and firecrackers. It could cost billions of dollars, but energy giant BP says it will pay all necessary and appropriate cleanup costs from that massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The promise came after the White House demanded that BP step up efforts to contain the oil slick that is still threatening the Gulf coastline from Louisiana to the Florida panhandle. And the head of the National Wildlife Federation says he has seen a huge number of dead jellyfish along the beach on an island at the southern end of Mississippi. Larry Schweiger says his team will go back out there to take issue and tissue samples to see if the oil spill caused their deaths. Storms that killed at least 15 people in Tennessee and Mississippi rolled into Georgia early Monday, flooding parts of Atlanta. The rain and flooding left at least 11 dead Sunday in Tennessee, closing interstates, displacing thousands from their homes, prompting evacuations of hotels and nursing homes, and turning streets and parking lots into raging rivers. The U.S. manufacturing sector expanded at the fastest pace in nearly 6 years in April, as factories continued to lead the economy's rebound. It is the fastest pace of growth since June of 2004. Registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock on the line with us now. This is good news, Mish, but what is fueling this growth?
Well, it's government spending fueling the growth, not just in the United States, but in China and everywhere else. You know, although it's the fastest growth, we have to look at what's really driving it here. I mean, GDP is estimated at 3.2%, yet this is the fastest ever growth. And how much stimulus did we spend to do that? Trillions and trillions of dollars to get GDP up 3.2%. We'll see if that sticks. I don't know if it does or not. But what I do know, it's not sustainable. And all the stimulus, and this is all we have to show for it. But auto sales, let's talk about auto sales for a second. They were up across the board.
They were up, yeah.
Up. They weren't up as much as expected, however.
And this was without cash for clunkers, right?
This is without cash for clunkers. That's correct. So they were up versus, you know, what we did see for cash for clunkers. I did an interesting post. I hope we have time here to spend a minute on it tonight. Someone sent me a link about university professors outsourcing grading papers to India. Now, this is actually the first I've heard of this, but apparently it's been going on here now for a little bit. But university professors at George Washington University, Roosevelt University, the University of Iowa, Northern University of Illinois, and various Canadian universities have outsourced grading papers to India. Now, really? And I thought about this.
I'm waiting for the punchline.
Well, people thought I was being sarcastic about this, but Dr. Chand, I hope I can get the name right here, Dr. Chandru Rajam at the George Washington University said, as long as outsourcing meant for the last 30 years blue-collar jobs, that was okay. He says the moment it extends to knowledge work, people get defensive. He goes, the idea that Edumetri can't mark an English composition paper 101 is ludicrous. Now, Edumetri is a part of this place that's called Virtual TA, which I'm assuming means Virtual Teacher's Teacher's Assistant or something like that. But the funny thing is here, George, I actually agree with this guy. He says the outsourcing of grading papers is a tremendous idea. I say, let's carry it one step forward and outsource this teacher. You know, think of the savings here. We have kids coming out of college, $200,000 in debt, so we can pay teachers to outsource the grading of papers to India.
Mish, the next thing will happen, kids will hire kids in India to study for them and outsource the education.
This is what it's come to, Joe. We could spend a long time talking about this issue. Maybe we should at some later date.
We will do that. I just wanted to get your quick take, though, on the economy. Yes or no? Is it going up or not?
I don't think so, George.
All right. Thanks. Mish's blog. It's part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Congressman Henry Wexman of California is seeking anti-vitamin amendments into a Wall Street reform bill. Now, listen to this. He wants to give the FTC more powers by allowing the FTC to write its own laws without congressional approval. This would somehow allow this rogue agency to simply invent any new law it wants, requiring nutritional supplement companies to spend hundreds of millions of dollars proving that their vitamins work before they can sell it. Now, on the face of it, this sounds good, right? Protecting us. The hidden meaning here, though, is what they really want to do is get the supplements off the market. Robin Falkov, here she is with her reaction on the Waxman Amendment. Robin, they're trying to push this. They're trying to control the sale of supplements, aren't they?
This is so insulting to the people of this country, George, because buried in a bill, H.R. 4173, that was 1,279 pages, another one of these monstrosities that I guess they function as a weapon if you carry it around. This was incorporated in the Wall Street Reform Bill. Where do they get off putting something that they're trying to do an end run around the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act that was passed in 1994, which allows vitamin companies to explain to the public on the label the functions and actions of these supplements? So instead of taking DeShea head on because they know what kind of an outcry they would be up against, they're going through the back door to try to give the FTC power. And back in 1980, the Magnuson-Moss Act took power away from the FTC.
And why is it going through the FTC and not the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA? This is weird, too.
Well, because that way they're not taking DeShea head on. So do you want to hear something really funny, George? What the FTC tried to do in 1980, which made them lose their power, they were going to impose a total ban on advertising directed at children.
Unbelievable.
That really shook people up in their pocketbooks.
In your opinion, are they going to sneak this amendment in for the vote, and is it going to pass?
They better not, and I would encourage everyone to please contact their senators. The information is on my website, healthfreedomrights.com. There's a link where they can go and contact their senators directly. And there's no way. This cannot happen. If a bill is about Wall Street reform, it should only be about Wall Street reform. How do we fix this, George?
We just have to keep at it, and we're going to keep watching it. Thank you, Robin. Lynn Redgrave, an introspective and independent player in her family's incredible acting dynasty, who became a 1960s sensation as the free-thinking title character of Georgie Girl and later dramatized her troubled past in such one-woman stage performances as Shakespeare for My Father and Nightingale, has died. She was 67 years old. She died peacefully in her home in Connecticut. Well, it was a good weekend for Freddy Krueger, they say. The 1980s horror villain is back with a vengeance with the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, earning a solid $32 million, landing it in first place at the box office this weekend. If you have trouble sleeping, you might want to think twice about this one. Email in, listen to this one, from Marina. It says, you know, I first heard the Is song in the middle of the night on one of your programs. That's Over the Rainbow. I didn't know at the time who was recording that, who the artist was, but I researched on the net and learned about this incredible man. I bought his CD and decided that when I die, they have to play his version of Over the Rainbow at my funeral. Kind of weird, huh? Brother is that song we play quite often. He passed on at an early age. And there you go, Marina. Stephen Hawking added again just a week or so ago. He talked about alien life and says, hey, don't contact them. We don't want them to visit us. Something could happen. Now, the famed astrophysicist Stephen Hawking believes that we are capable of time travel, claiming that he's not as concerned about being labeled crazy as he once was. Hawking has publicly aired his second now startling in 2 weeks. Hawking said that once spaceships were built that could fly faster than the speed of light, a day on board would be equivalent to a year on Earth. He believed humans could travel millions of years into the future and repopulate their devastated planet. Hawking says moving backwards, however, is impossible because it violates a fundamental rule that cause comes before effect. Up next, Venus on fire, Mars on ice. As I said, it's not about the planets. John Gray with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Our main guest tonight, John Gray, certified family therapist, consulting editor of the Family Journal, member of the very distinguished advisory board of the International Association of Marriage and Family Counselors. He's the author now of 17 books, including, of course, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and his latest, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, internationally recognized expert in the field of communication and relationships. John Gray, back with us after about 2 years since a complete show, John. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, George. It's a real pleasure.
Still traveling all over the country?
Well, I'm just launching the book tonight. It just came out this weekend. Today is the first day it's out.
Our producers are fast, aren't they?
They certainly are.
How have you been? What's new?
I'm doing great. Well, you know, all my work is about gender differences, helping men and women understand each other. But you really, to have good relationships, and we need to have the foundation of good health, or at least hormonal balance. And what I found is that the most current research, up-to-date research, is showing how men and women's brains function differently, how we cope with stress differently, how our hormones are different. And some of this astounding new interesting ideas that I think everybody's going to be interested in tonight. Like, for example, women's stress levels, the cortisol, is twice as high as men's these days, and that's in the workplace. And it has to do with when women are doing jobs that involve urgency and emergency and uncertainty, it stimulates a higher level of stress in women, and then they're coming home and their stress levels shoot up even more because they don't have time to do all the things that they want to get done because they're sort of wired up differently. They're not wired up just to sit down and relax when they get home. They're rewired to cook and clean and do all these things. And I know that sounds totally backwards, but you can see that women's brains don't relax when they get home. They become actually more active. And when they don't have enough time, they become overwhelmed and stressed. And now you've got, you know, women coming home who are stressed, and then that makes men more stressed. So we need to understand this difference, and there's some practical things we can do to help resolve the whole situation.
John, when you wrote the book years ago, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, you wanted to really point out the differences between what a guy goes through, what a woman goes through, and you did that very successfully, was well-received, bestseller, millions of copies worldwide were sold. As you moved into this work, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, have we changed at all as a society, as sexes? Have we changed?
Well, that's a really great idea. The physiology is thousands of years old. It doesn't change overnight or in a blink of the eye, which is the last 20 or 30 years. But what has changed dramatically and radically, more so than, you know, history even points out, is women doing more traditional male jobs. There's a lot of role reversal going on. And it's having a devastating effect on our health, on our wellness, and on the quality of our relationships, which is evidenced by the, you know, the rate of divorce. Mm-hmm. It shifted in 1969. It went from 10% to 50% of divorce because there was legislation that said divorce could become easier. No-fault divorce was implemented, and 90% of the sudden rise of divorce was women leaving their marriages. And this was the foundation of this was, of course, dissatisfaction on both parts. But it was women could now support themselves, and they didn't have to go to court in order to get a divorce. So that has remained steady for the last 50 years, that there's 50% divorce. But what hasn't remained steady, which has dramatically gone up and as evidence of their dissatisfaction, is many, many more people are not getting married than before, almost a 50% increase in the amount of single people than in just 30, 40 years.
Well, and that's a good point, too, because of the divorce rate, John. Women are supporting themselves more. They're not stuck like they used to be, back in the 50s and early 60s, are they?
Right. Well, for hundreds of years, women, 100 years ago, women couldn't even vote. And go back a few hundred years, they couldn't own property. But suddenly when women have education, when they have the opportunity for careers, they can support themselves. That then causes their expectations in relationships to go up, and it also causes their stress levels to go up, and suddenly their needs in a relationship change. Women today do not know how to articulate those needs to men, and men don't even have a clue as to what these women are needing. And if women were to articulate those needs, often it won't make them happy anyway. That's what I've seen, being a counselor over 35 years now, is that so often women say things like, I want a man in touch with his feelings who'll open up and share. Well, if I train a man to do that, which I thought was a good thing 25 years ago, a month later the woman comes back saying, I didn't realize he had so many problems. I'm not turned on to him. Or, I love him. I care about him. But, I feel like he's a child and he's so sensitive. His feelings get hurt. I have to walk on eggshells. So often what women say they want when they get it, it's not going to make them happy. So, I spent my career, my life, focusing on finding real practical ways to assist women in being able to be realistic in their expectations of men in order to find balance in their lives so that they can get the kind of support they need in order to be happy, because men aren't going to be happy being married to their wives if their wives aren't happy. As a marriage counselor, hearing people who want divorces, when a man wants to leave, his main reason is, no matter what I do, it's never enough to make her happy. And when a woman wants to leave, she's saying, I give and I give and, I never get what I need. It's literally her saying, I'm not getting what I need, and him saying, I'm doing everything I can, but it's never enough to give her what she needs, so might as well give up. So that's, in a sense, the theme of the title of the new book, which is Mars on Ice, whereas Venus on Fire. Women are overwhelmed. Men tend to lose interest in relationships. Now, this very interesting parallels a physiological phenomena which is occurring today that's never happened before in our history. And that is, there's a massive hormonal shift taking place. For example, if you look at the testosterone levels of an indigenous person, they peak around 20 years old, and they'll last till 90 or 100 years old at the same level. The average 35-year-old man starts decreasing in his testosterone by 1.5% every year. So he gets back to about around 50 years old. He only has half the testosterone levels. The average 40-year-old man today has the testosterone levels of a 70-year-old man just 30 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
So these are huge drops. Huge, significant drops. And why that's so important, this new book, it's about the hormone differences and what's happening in our culture. And we'll explore why this is happening and what we can do about it. But for men, and this is the National Institute of Health says that one of the number one risk factors for heart disease in men is low testosterone. The lower a man's testosterone levels go, the higher his risk of heart disease. Now, the flip side of this is testosterone is not really that important to women. Men need about 30 times more in order to be healthy, whereas women have very low testosterone levels relative to a man, but what they need to cope with stress.
Let's get into that, John, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And also, I want to really get your definition of what is stress. Is it environmental effects from lifestyle? What is it? We'll be back. With our special guest tonight, John Gray, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice. Hey, by the way, are you a Streamlink member? You can be for just pennies a day, where you get downloads of this program, for example, podcasts, past archives, and even iPhone apps. Streamlink, just go to coasttocoastam.com. John, your definition of stress, what is it?
Well, everybody's got experiences where they have emergency, urgency, change, rapid change in their lives. And this is why stress has gone up with more faster communication, with more things to do in the day, because we have all of our modern conveniences. This actually increases the stress, which means opportunities to succeed or fail, greater choice and greater decisions and more urgent decisions, meaning a faster pace of life, actually causes what's called the stress response in the body. The stress response is measured by cortisol. And what happens if, in the old days, if a bear was chasing us, we'd experience a rise in cortisol. It would raise our blood sugar. It would cause our muscles to run faster, and then we'd be exhausted and tired. That's the emergency mode. It also causes blood flow to the back part of the brain where we have faster reaction time, but we're not capable of making creative decisions. We're actually capable of reacting quickly according to patterns of the past, of pre-programmed patterns. So literally, when people are under stress, they don't make the best decisions, but more importantly, it affects our health dramatically. If we just had occasional moments of stress, our body would become stressed. The whole shift would go from our normal mode of functioning to emergency mode and then back, and then the body would recover. But we tend to be in a stress mode chronically now because we have so much a sense of urgency, emergency. And this has a much bigger toll on women. When we look at the stress levels in women, first of all, just a sense of uncertainty or urgency and emergency on a man can actually calm him if he has confidence. A woman could have confidence, but still her stress levels go up much, much higher than a man's. And then when a woman does experience stress, even the moderate stress of what women call feeling overwhelmed, they feel like there's not enough time to get everything done because there's so many more opportunities to do things. They overschedule things, and suddenly they're going, I have to do this. When you do a brain scan of a woman who's feeling overwhelmed versus a man who's also reporting moderate stress, they're both in the same similar situation, and they both report to be moderately stressed. There's 8 times more blood flow in the emotional part of the brain of a woman. And this goes to the hippocampus, which is the emotional memory. And it activates the memory of bad things in her life or stressful things in her life, and it creates a sense of panic. If she's in a relationship with a guy, literally when she's under moderate stress, she experiences a kind of temporary amnesia where she forgets any good thing he's ever done. And she's suddenly remembering all the bad things or all the disappointments or the frustrations, or she's anticipating bad things to happen. And this is what happens when women are in a world which is much more stressful than before. Their happiness levels have now dramatically gone down. And this has been reported by universities in the last 10 years, where for 50 years they've been doing tests showing that women were happier than men. Now women are showing to be less happy than men. Women's illnesses are on the rise as well. You can almost, you know, some of the old news was that the more educated a woman was or financially independent, the less chance she was of getting married or staying married. And that's absolutely true. But now what you have is the more educated a woman is, the more financially sufficient she is, the higher her risk of cancer, breast cancer in general. Wherever there's population growth of wealthy women, the breast cancer levels are much higher. And this is because they have more opportunities. And with more opportunity comes more choice, and choice raises stress. And for women, what the new research has shown, and this was done at UCLA about 6 years ago, that a hormone called oxytocin is the hormone that lowers stress for women. And testosterone lowers oxytocin. And when you're doing testosterone activities, it doesn't stimulate oxytocin. Anything that has to do with emergency inhibits the production of oxytocin, and therefore it's harder for women to maintain a healthier response to stress. So you asked me, what is this stress we're talking about? It's measured by cortisol in the body, and it has very predictable effects on the body. The first is that you get tired out faster. You tend to start feeling exhausted and tired due to chronic stress levels, and then the adrenal gland makes cortisol. It then starts becoming exhausted, and your stress levels and your exhaustion energy levels just stay really, really low. Also inhibits digestion, and when digestion is inhibited, then the body can't get the amino acids from protein necessary to make the good brain chemicals that make us feel good, and then we become even more stressed. Also, if you're stressed, it inhibits the functioning of your immune system. Literally, you know, anybody's gotten a speeding ticket, for example, they know that's a big moment of stress. If you look at your blood at that time, you'll see that the immune system stops making white blood cells for several days. The immune system literally is not functioning under stress. Your body's basically saying, I don't care about staying alive. We need to get away from this animal, and then we can come back to keeping our body healthy.
Yeah, we'll worry about that later. That's what it does to you, doesn't it?
Exactly. Everything that has to do with maintaining a healthy body and a good mood and good feelings, all of the things for good relationship and health, simply go on hold when the body's in this emergency mode. And it's not like today we're all in emergency mode all the time, but compared to other times, it's much, much higher. And this takes a huge toll on the body. And then that causes sugar cravings. People start wanting to eat carbohydrates. And never before in history have people eaten so many carbohydrates. You know, we need some carbohydrate as fuel for the brain. But when we eat so many carbohydrates, what it does, it creates a whole list of health problems, cancer and heart disease. And, of course, diabetes and obesity are some of the big names that happen when we start experiencing this stress mode.
I lowered my glucose levels, John, after you were on with us 2 years ago when you told me about PGX, that supplement, and I dropped it 30 points.
Well, George, that's what in my new book, Venus on Fire, this chapter 3 is all about the importance of blood sugar for balancing hormones, for good brain chemistry, for being healthy. And it's a simple solution for people that, you know, don't want to go off to a, you know, be on a raw food diet or something like that. There's ways that you can take PGX and it will help to stabilize blood sugar for you.
That's a pretty good drop, isn't it? 30 points?
It's fantastic. It's fantastic just to think of doing that. For me, the experience was, you know, I'm 58, and I started noticing in my 50s I was starting to feel tired after eating, particularly if I had carbohydrates or desserts or something.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of unstable blood sugar. And so when I started taking the PGX, which is like a fiber for people to with water, it just slows down the digestive process and makes it more thorough and prevents blood sugar spikes. When you're able to slowly digest the carbohydrates instead of them happening very fast, then you don't get low blood sugar and you don't get spikes of insulin. And so that's what you were finding is the wonderful change. For me, it was just basically, I'm no longer tired after eating meals, which is great. I've got a good 4 to 5 hours of energy, stable energy, because my blood sugar is stable.
Back to stress for a second. Can people literally keel over and die from being too stressful?
Well, certainly they could. I mean, basically a heart attack. Whenever a heart attack happens, there's always a spike in cortisol. You know, it's kind of, and I'm sure you've done shows on this, the whole myth of cholesterol, as if cholesterol is the big factor for heart disease. You know, for those that don't know that part of it, 50% of the people who have heart attacks have high cholesterol and 50% have low cholesterol. And nobody over 70 has low cholesterol. Everybody, to get over 70, you need high cholesterol. And there's no set amount for anybody. You know, I've seen studies showing people, families, their genes, they have high cholesterol and they live to 80s and 90s and they don't have heart disease and it's way in their 300s. That's just their body type. So that's not really the big parameter. But what is the parameter that always goes along with heart disease in men, it's going to be hormonal imbalance. It's going to be low testosterone and then high stress. The typical time for a man's heart attack, when they kind of do statistics on when do men have them, it's Monday morning. It's kind of like he has the weekend to forget all his problems, and now he's looking towards a stressful week. And that pressure, anticipating that, will cause a cortisol spike. And it's also just sitting on the john as well when it happens, which often stress is associated with constipation. That puts pressure, and with that along with stress, and suddenly you have the trigger for a heart attack. Because when you're under stress, another thing your body does is it constricts the vessels. That's like a hose. If you want your water to shoot faster out of a hose, you constrict it. You know, you put your thumb in front of it, and it will shoot farther. Well, the same thing the body does. It wants that blood to flow faster and further, so the blood vessels will constrict. That creates more pressure. That puts more strain on a heart if you don't have enough capillaries to deliver all that blood to the muscles when you're under stress. And then when there's that pressure on the vessels, it breaks off the plaque. And plaque is harmless unless you're under stress. But the plaque will break off, and that can cause a stroke and prevent the blood flow from happening. And when oxygen doesn't get to the heart, then you suddenly die. You just keel over and die. And that's just simply one of the vessels is being blocked by plaque. But the plaque breaks off, and then there's a blood clot. And your blood actually starts clotting up when you're under stress as well. It's your body's anticipation of actually being pierced by an animal's teeth, and blood needs to clot at that time. So if you're actually under stress, your body thinks you're being chased by an animal. It goes to all these protective mechanisms that in our modern-day life are not so protective, but can actually cause us to die.
Who copes better with stress, a man or a woman?
Joe? Men are coping much better with stress, and this is why it used to be women did. And this is because women lived a lifestyle that was routine, that didn't have a lot of decisions, but it was nurturing and it was routine. You know, if you cook, it's pretty routine. If you clean, it's pretty routine. Whereas men were out doing the uncertainty, urgency, sacrifice types jobs. But when you're doing a nurturing activities as well as routine activities, and when you're feeling safe throughout that activity and you feel supported instead of feeling alone, then what happens is a hormone called oxytocin gets produced, and oxytocin lowers stress levels for women. But because women have changed their roles today, their bodies don't have enough oxytocin in order to lower stress levels. We're just learning about oxytocin in the last 10 years. We've known about it as far as an important hormone for childbirth, but when the drug companies discovered that oxytocin was the hormone necessary for women's sexual response and for climax in the bedroom, then suddenly a lot of money has been poured into producing the oxytocin pill. It's a hormone pill that immediately and dramatically increases women's sexual response. But overall, generally, in a broader stroke, it's oxytocin that helps women to cope effectively with stress. And now women's lifestyle doesn't give them enough time to do that. There are ways she can, in my book, I talk about super oxytocin and just things she can do that will stimulate higher levels of oxytocin in a shorter amount of time. Certainly another option is taking the hormone oxytocin, which some clinics are doing now, but it's not getting to the root cause of why she's not making oxytocin and why she's not making other hormones as well. And that's going to shorten her life. So I'm always telling people, you know, if you want symptomatic relief, make sure you have a really, really good doctor, but you're really not getting to the cause of the problem, and you're going to age faster and die faster, and you're going to be more vulnerable to diseases unless you get to the root cause, which is, we come back to it with it, all hormone production. It has to do with an exhausted adrenal gland. And when we can learn to balance blood sugar, and one of the practical things, as you were talking about before, is PGX, but there's a lot of other things, too, that people can do, but that's the simplest and easiest. But when you balance blood sugar, it puts less stress on the adrenal gland to make cortisol. And then when you're not making cortisol all the time, the body makes an abundance of these other hormones.
How many people, John, are walking around with either type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, and they don't even know it?
All right, well, this is, you know, there's some research today that says 1 out of 3 people walking around today is pre-diabetic.
Oh my.
Now, that's shocking. It's shocking. And even President Clinton was saying a while back, a couple of years ago, he said that the predictions are by 2020, 1 out of 3 children will have adult onset diabetes before they're 20 years old. Or pre-diabetes before they're 20 years old. Now, what's so shocking about that is usually people get diabetes. They're either born with it, that's diabetes 1, and it's much different from diabetes 2, which is what's become rampant today and deathly. basically. Your risk of heart disease dramatically goes up with diabetes. Your risk of cancer goes up. And, of course, your risk of brain strokes and brain problems and blindness and amputations and all that goes up. It's not a pretty sight. But to think that children are getting it is quite dramatic as well. And the statistics are 1 out of 3 children by 2020, I think it's 2020, that will be 1 out of 3 will be pre-diabetic.
That's frightening statistic.
And the simple reason for that, there's no doubt, there's no question, is the amount of high processed carbohydrates that everybody eating. And you know, I'm a big fan of the whole natural foods industry, and I'm on all the newsletters, and I get the ones from the natural people and the regular standard food distribution people. And the sugar industry puts out a newsletter as well, and they come and they fund them. And they'll put out these disclaimers, and they say there's no evidence that consumption of sugar can cause diabetes. And that's just nonsense. But they can be accurate, and they can say that, because if you were just to have a couple of teaspoons of sugar every 4 or 5 hours every day, that wouldn't cause diabetes. You know, it'd be just a very small amount. But just, you know, even for people to put it in perspective, a glass of apple juice, 8 ounces of apple juice, has 27 grams of sugar in it, which is the equivalent of 7 teaspoons of sugar. That is way too much for the body to consume.
What about organic apple juice?
Doesn't matter. Well, organic apple juice is certainly better because you're not getting the pesticides. Pesticides have estrogen in them, and it's the estrogen that which is responsible for lowering all of this testosterone in men and throwing women's hormones off, which estrogens are everywhere. We can talk more about that, but just in terms of organic apple juice, certainly it's great. But remember when we were kids, we always got these little tiny cups. And you go in a restaurant, they have little tiny glasses for your orange juice or your apple juice, because that's all that the brain can handle. Anything more than that becomes a neurotoxin. Huh. And for most body types will then be immediately converted into excess fat and prediabetes.
I did not know that. See, you, every 2 years you teach me something.
Oh, good.
What is wrong with the pasta, the white breads, the starches, the potatoes, if you're pre-diabetic? They say stay off that stuff.
Yeah, all the white foods, basically, what's going to happen is, you know, people understand sugar causes blood sugar to rise, but they don't understand a white potato is like eating almost pure sugar. It just converts straight into sugar and causes blood sugar levels to spike. Anything more than a couple of teaspoons of sugar will cause blood sugar levels to spike. And if you're pre-diabetic, what that means is that your cells have become resistant to insulin, and insulin is what delivers sugar to the cells. So then you eat a couple of teaspoons of sugar, but it doesn't get to the cells. And now you've got high blood sugar. And high blood sugar becomes an acid that can cause damage to the brain and to the eyes and to the nerves. So your body's desperately trying to keep blood sugar levels low, and chronically high blood sugar actually damages the body. And there's foods, the pasta will convert right into sugar. White bread, and all of your enriched breads, you know, even brown bread today, whole wheat bread, when you go to the store, if it doesn't say whole grain, it's enriched. And enriched means they've refined it, they've ground it, and they've taken the fiber out of it. It will just dissolve in your mouth. Anything that kind of dissolves in your mouth, that means there's no fiber in it. And suddenly the carbohydrate becomes very concentrated and goes right into your bloodstream and rises up. The reason the PGX had helped you is because PGX has it's a fiber called konjac root, which is also very popular in Europe. It started in Asia. The Buddhist monks, and to this day, they have noodles, but they have konjac noodles. And these are very fibrous noodles that are viscous in their nature. And viscous means it absorbs water. So if you eat some of these noodles, and people can buy them if you go to Chinese supermarkets, and most towns have them, mm-hmm. and ask for konjac noodles, you can have those noodles, and they won't cause your blood sugar to spike. They stabilize your blood sugar, even if you're eating other carbohydrates. It's not that you can't have any, it's just you have to be very, very moderate about it.
Let's spend some more time when we come back, John, about these hormones and what you can do to fix that. Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice. He also has the DVD series of the same name. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.